Hello again on this podcast, an all-too-familiar theme. American democracy and the rule of law are under assault as never before. That's according to the FBI, the CIA, and the National Security Agency. Intelligence they've gathered for several years has led Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller to indict 13 Russian nationals and three Russian groups for interfering in last year's election. Here's H.R. McMaster. He is President Trump's National Security Advisor.
And as you can see with the FBI indictment, the evidence is now really incontrovertible and available in the public domain.
But President Trump still calls Mueller's effort a witch hunt, and he's been critical of all three intelligence agencies. On today's podcast, we'll look at what's at stake, not just for the U.S., but for other democracies around the world. First, the indictment. Tim Weiner was a Pulitzer Prize winner for the New York Times. His books include Enemies, A History of the FBI, and Legacy of Ashes, The History of the CIA. Thanks for joining us again.
Hello, Warren.
Tell us about this indictment, which you have read cover to cover in a very intensive way. What do you think it leads to?
Well, what Mueller has done is to lay the groundwork for a continuing criminal investigation of Team Trump. He's done this by indicting the Internet Research Agency, the Russian Unregistered Political Action Committee, on a charge of conspiracy to defraud the United States. He has also indicted Paul Manafort, the Trump campaign chairman from 2 years ago, on exactly the same charge. If he establishes to the court's satisfaction that that conspiracy existed, then attempts to obstruct or impede the investigation of that conspiracy go directly to the Oval Office.
Directly to the Oval Office, because why? Why do we know that? Why do you say
that? Because the President of the United States fired the FBI director last year when he would not drop the case against Mike Flynn, the National Security Advisor, who has since pleaded guilty. This was a continuing criminal investigation when Flynn lied to the FBI 4 days into the Trump administration in January 2017. The counterintelligence case into Russian interference became a criminal case. That criminal case is now directly aimed at the President of the United States, members of his immediate family, and the team that won him the election and that works for him in the White House.
The president has said, once again, that this is a witch hunt. He most recently has said, "I never said Russia did not meddle in the election. I said it may be Russia or China or another country or group, or it may be a 400-pound genius sitting in bed and playing with his computer. The Russian hoax was that the Trump campaign colluded with Russia. It never did." Is that a persuasive statement from the president?
It is not. It is a lie. And Mueller's case against the Russians establishes that this conspiracy was real, that it was aimed against the United States, aimed to disrupt our democracy, and aimed to elect Donald Trump. Because, after all, what could be more disruptive of American democracy than Donald Trump?
On the other hand, it would appear that it started out just to interfere with the process, not necessarily to elect one candidate or not elect another. There's a lot, obviously, of hostility between Vladimir Putin and Hillary Clinton. So it did change in mid-conspiracy, I guess you could say.
That's correct. And on April 6, 2016, days after Trump clinched the Republican nomination, the Russians began promoting content on the Internet explicitly supporting Trump's candidacy and opposing Hillary Clinton's.
In your book and elsewhere, there are many reports of the United States, very specifically the CIA, interfering with elections in other countries, most famously to topple the elected government in Iran and put the Shah in power. Also, of course, in Chile with the Allende government. If the United States has been doing this for so many years, how can we be offended by what the Russians are doing.
Well, it is true that over the course of the last seven decades, the CIA has interfered in the governments of at least 40 other nations. It is also true that Russia engaged in information warfare, essentially an act of war, against the United States, aimed at the 2016 election and aimed at electing Donald Trump. This is one way the game of nations gets played. And while we have to acknowledge that CIA has not only meddled in other nations' elections with suitcases full of cash, but in a notable handful of cases in the Cold War, ran coups to overthrow democratically established governments. This is a long game. This is how you fight war without weapons. It doesn't in any way legitimate what the Russians did.
Again, Tim Weiner is a Pulitzer Prize winner, and his books include Enemies, A History of the FBI. We'll talk about the FBI in a minute, and also Legacy of Ashes, The History of the CIA. So, Russia is accused of meddling in U.S. elections, but the U.S., once again, has been doing the same thing for years. Timothy Snyder is a history professor at Yale. His latest book is The Road to Unfreedom, Russia, Europe, America. It's going to be out in April. Professor, good to have you with us.
Very glad to be with you.
Do you agree with Tim Weiner that this is the game, the way the game is played, that you can't necessarily say it's okay for Russia just because the United States has done the same thing for so many years?
Well, I mean, I would pose the question at a slightly higher level. Are you for democracy or are you against it? If you're for it, then you're for it in your own country. And you're for it in general. If you're for it, that means you're against the United States interfering in other people's democratic elections, or you're against the United States bringing down democratic governments. But you're also against Russia interfering in other people's elections and Russia bringing down other people's governments. The problem with the argument that everybody does it is it leads you into this impossible, almost masochistic position where you say, well, the fact that we did something wrong means that we deserve for this to happen to us. No, the fact that the CIA did something in Argentina or Guatemala doesn't mean that I deserve or my children deserve Russia to fake my elections. We have to be for democracy or against democracy. It's as simple as that.
Let us get back to what Tim Weiner said about the Trump administration, specifically that the investigation now is directly pointed at the White House and the Oval Office. What about the president's response from your standpoint, and what impact do you think it has had here and elsewhere?
Well, let me just say three things about that. The first is that what is happening in the United States is part of a much longer and larger pattern. Russia has been taking part in ever more sophisticated cyber warfare designed to destabilize democracies and promote particular candidates, beginning no later than Estonia in 2007. So we're looking at a progression that's taken place over the course of a decade. What's in a way, you know, what happens in the U.S. can be best understood as part of a thought-through pattern which begins in Russia. The investigations we have are only leading us back towards something which is, if you're working on Russia or working on Ukraine, very familiar. The second thing, the American response has been defined by American exceptionalism. We ask these questions about, can it happen to us? We waste time on these things. Well, it's clearly already happening to us. We assume we're outside, we're exceptional. In fact, we're typical. We fall for the same things that other people fall for. The only way we're exceptional is that we have a leader who is himself the payload of the cyber weapon, right? We're exceptional in the sense that we're worse off than pretty much everybody else because we've now had a leader elected by way of Russian cyber warfare or with the help of Russian cyber warfare, which puts us in this very strange position that instead of having an executive branch which defends us against what is, obviously, I agree with Tim completely, an act of war, we have an executive who tries to find ways to explain how, you know, it's not really his fault.
Well, wait a minute. The special prosecutor and the FBI, Rosenstein and the FBI have been very careful to say that so far there is no evidence that the Russian effort did in fact help to elect President Trump.
No, that's not actually what they said.
Okay.
They said they're not passing judgment on that question. But I'm not, unlike Mr. Mueller, for whom I have a great deal of respect, I'm not building a legal case piece by piece according to a legal logic. I'm looking at the evidence that we have as a whole. If we look at at the scale of the Russian effort and the narrow margin of the victory, I think the burden of proof would be to on those who say this didn't make a difference. If you look at the few thousand votes in Wisconsin or Michigan or Pennsylvania that decided this thing, and you look at the billions of hits that resulted from the Russian cyber campaign. If you look at efforts like Tennessee GOP, right, 10 GOP, which was 10 times as popular as the actual Republican Twitter site. If you look at all the prominent people from Michael Flynn through Sean Hannity who retweeted Russian material right down to the day of the election, I think really the burden's on you to say this didn't make a difference.
You mentioned that there's a pattern in Russia. You mentioned that the U.S. is different from other countries in that the chief executive is, in fact, the payoff, as you put it. And also, however, that all the Justice Department has said is that it's not passing judgment on the elections. What do you think what is the most likely thing to happen next, as far as you're concerned?
Well, on the Russian side, they've moved from cyber war to basically cyber colonization. So, I mean, from their point of view, November 2016 is a victory, and the fact that it's a victory means that you just keep pushing. So, hence, they push on the Devin Nunes memo, which is an issue they basically invented. You push on events like the shooting in Florida. You try to turn that in ways which will continue to divide and anger Americans. You intervene on basically every hot-button issue, either to support Mr. Trump or just to keep America in disarray so that policy can't be made. And the fact that we don't yet have a coherent response to this is very encouraging to them. So one thing we can be sure of is that this campaign will just continue. The Mueller indictment is basically time travel back to 2016. Let's now try to get a grip on what's happened in 2016. But it just keeps going. I mean, in terms of the U.S. side, I think Tim will be a better predictor than me, but my sense is that the circle is slowly going to close. You've reached a point. I mean, I've been writing about this for 2 years, but it's getting harder and harder not to understand that something very strange happened in 2016. I think the circle is closing. It will just keep closing.
And, of course, all the intelligence agencies have said the same thing and testified to that before the committees of Congress. Tim Snyder, once again at Yale, will come back. I want to talk to you further about the implications of this for other countries. But first, let me go back to our other Tim Weiner, and again, historian of both the FBI and the CIA. What about the use of the FBI, or what about the president's tweet about the FBI missing the signals sent out by the Florida school shooter? This is not acceptable. They're spending too much time trying to prove Russian collusion with the Trump campaign. There is no collusion. Get back to the basics and make us all proud. How do you put that tweet into context?
Well, against strong competition, it's one of the most offensive things that the president has tweeted over the course of the last year. To use the bodies of dead teenagers as a way to attack the legitimacy of the investigation into Russian meddling is unspeakable. Trump continues to deny any Russian meddling. He keeps calling the story a hoax and a witch hunt. Whether this is malevolence or simply delusional, I will leave to others. It's probably both.
What does it mean for the Russian effort to discredit the legitimacy of America's investigative agencies and the democracy of our democracy?
What the Russians have been doing for years is to attack Western democracies, plural, from the western border of Russia to the west coast of the United States. They're doing it today. They are going to do it in the midterm elections. And their goal will clearly be to keep the Republican control of the Congress. If the House of Representatives flips from red to blue in November, the first order of business in January will be the impeachment of the President of the United States. In the months between today and November, Bob Mueller's investigation is going to close in on people like Jared Kushner, the President's son-in-law, the President's son, Don Jr., members of the White House staff, President and former, and ultimately on the President himself. the Constitution and the courts are silent on whether a sitting president can be indicted. And Bob Mueller is, among other things, cautious. He will probably not try to make new law by indicting the president of the United States. But we do have a precedent, that being Richard Nixon, saying that a sitting president can be named as an unindicted co-conspirator in a criminal case. And my own belief is that is where Mueller is heading.
You mentioned Jared Kushner. This week there was news that the Mueller investigation is in fact focused on him and on family businesses in Russia. But there was also the statement that that's a red line for President Trump and that he might try to fire Mueller if he in fact closes that red line. What about that, and how likely do you think that is?
Firing Bob Mueller would be suicidal. To reenact the Saturday Night Massacre, even this president must understand, would be an act of enormous arrogance and yet another count of obstruction of justice to be levied against him. Short of getting tanks to roll down Pennsylvania Avenue and blow up FBI headquarters, there is little that Trump can effectively do to impede this investigation within the ambit of the law.
Meantime, of course, he wants to see a military parade on Pennsylvania Avenue. So
that's
a parade of a different kind.
Yeah.
Let me go back to our other Tim, Tim Snyder at Yale, on the question of Western democracies and the Russian targeting of Western democracies. To what extent are Western democracies linked? And to what extent does the United States appear to be their leader, and is it exerting the kind of leadership that is expected?
I think that's a really important question, because the more I think about this, and this goes back to your first question too about moral equivalence and hypocrisy, the more I think about it, the more it strikes me that democracy comes and goes in waves and in clusters, that it's very hard to go it alone. So the moment that you stop caring about democracy in your country, if you're a big country like the U.S., that's the moment when you're also starting to help authoritarianism abroad. And if you care about democracy in your own country, then I think it's consistent that you care about it in other places. Just as a matter of fact, the great time of the expansion of democracy, the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, is a time when the United States was engaged in the world, and a time when the United States at the beginning was supporting West European democracies by way of the Marshall Plan, allowing for what became the process of European integration, which led to the most important cluster of democracies, democracies that support each other economically and politically and also just happen to border upon one another. I think now what we're seeing is the opposite process. As the U.S. pulls back and as the leader of the United States behaves in ways which are not just non-democratic but clearly anti-democratic, now that we have a leader who openly scorns the rhetoric of human rights and democracy and who openly openly supports dictators around the world, at least at a personal level, by expressing his friendship for them, we see the consequences, which is that whether it's in Burma or whether it's in Poland, people take cues from the United States. If something is possible in America, then people will follow that language. A simple example is the trope of fake news, which Mr. Trump has spread around the world. So I think democracies travel in groups, and you know, the United States is a very important member of that group. And when we pull away, that has consequences.
When you say that the U.S. has pulled back, wasn't that also true in the previous administration, the Obama administration?
The United States was less engaged in Europe in the Obama administration, but the United States we did not have a leader who attacked the press or suggested that his political opponent should be shot to death. We did not have a leader then who expressed their support for what was basically an authoritarian coup d'etat in Turkey. We did not have a leader who preferred contacts with authoritarians over contacts with democratic American allies. So, no, I don't think the phenomena are comparable. Authoritarians and people who have authoritarian aspirations around the world see Mr. Trump as an exemplar. That is something that's rather new.
People like to think that the United States can go it alone. I take it you're suggesting that that's not true of other countries. What about the United States?
No, I mean, we can't go it alone as a democracy. I don't believe that that's possible. And the idea of America First is really telling here. What America First does is that the first step is that it brings you away from the world, and then the next thing you do is you find that the enemy is at home. That's how America First worked in the 1930s. The idea is, you know, we'll protect ourselves from the rest of the world, but then the next thing you do is you talk about which Americans come first, who are the real Americans. And that's the logic of the Trump administration as well. You can't pull back from the idea of democracy in general and then support it at home. That's true for ideological reasons. It's also true in the long run, it's also true for economic reasons. So, no, I don't think the U.S. can go it alone, and I certainly don't want to undertake the experiment. I think the experiment is an extremely risky one.
Timothy Snyder, again, history professor at Yale. Back to our other Tim Weiner, author of Histories of the FBI and the CIA. What about the president's attacks on these agencies, these intelligence agencies? We heard even his national security advisor, H.R. McMaster, says that they leave no doubt that the Russians are, in fact, doing what the president calls a hoax. How important is that, and how important are those agencies?
The president's toxic tweet storm over this past weekend included the thought that the Russians must be laughing their asses off. And he was right, although not for the reasons one imagines he posited. By helping to elect Donald Trump, the Russians not only got an American president who is determined to pull down the pillars of the Atlantic Alliance, NATO, for example, but who from day one has been at war with the FBI, the CIA, and the National Security Agency, which unanimously declared that the Russians had conducted this information warfare against the United States and helped to get him elected. This is a very dangerous state of affairs. There is plenty of ammunition to criticize the CIA and the FBI for some of their extra-legal acts over the decades, and I've written two thick books documenting many.
You have indeed.
But if the FBI and the CIA are actually working to prevent an attack on American democracy, and the president in turn is attacking them for what he's doing, we are in a kind of civil war that's taking place up and down Pennsylvania Avenue, and that war is going to continue unless and until the Republicans' grip on Congress is reversed.
Tim Snyder, we've heard Tim Weiner say that the Democrats will impeach the president if, in fact, they take over the Congress. Do you think that's true? Do you agree with that?
I guess looking at the time between now and January, I think there's a very important conversation that has to take place, which isn't taking place, about what it means to be American. It's become hard for us to understand that something that happens in our country actually has to do with another country. We treat everything that happens as though it's all about us. But in fact, there are parties out there in the world that wish us harm. Russia doesn't want democracy or the rule of law to function in Europe or the United States because it doesn't function in Russia. And they have means of making our reality become more like their reality. I think there are a lot of folks in the American center and on the American right who haven't quite come to grips with the fact that we're under attack. And I think it's very important that regardless of red and blue, that American citizens realize that we're under attack, and that an attack on some Americans or attack on some American party is an attack on all Americans, an attack on all American parties. I think the issue has to be recast before we get to January, not as a partisan one, but as one that's about the sovereignty and the basic institutions of the United States. I agree that if we shift from red to blue, that impeachment's going to follow. I think it's a shame that issues which should be of basic interest to everybody are going to end up being framed in a partisan way, and I hope that by the time we get to January, it'll be less rather than more partisan.
Tim Weiner, quickly, a political question. Are the Democrats able, do you think, or are they being effective at taking advantage of the kind of danger that both of you have described?
Individual members of Congress have been, but unless the Democratic Party establishment grows a spine, a brainstem, and a brain quickly this year, the forces of openness, transparency, and indeed of participatory democracy will continue to be under attack from the Russians and from members of the Republican Party who are protecting and defending these attacks by essentially saying there's nothing to see here, move along, America. I think what Tim Snyder said is extraordinarily eloquent, is that the United States is under attack today from Russia, and we have not mounted a defense, and our president denies that the attack took place.
Very quickly, Tim Snyder, already in the aftermath of the Florida shooting and the new, somewhat more effective campaign against guns, it would appear, with young people taking up the issue and the president meeting with young people about that. We already see the Russian bots that have been identified so clearly trying to counter that on the Internet. Does that suggest that, once again, this is a campaign that's not only underway, but can be very effective?
Yeah, I mean, it's a striking example, because here we have in the real world that we all have to share the murder of children, and yet it's hard to focus on that issue. It's hard to focus on the fact that tens of thousands of people senselessly die in the United States as a result of guns. It's hard to focus on the basic fact that states with better gun control legislation see fewer deaths than states that have worse gun control legislation, because 30 minutes after the event, the Russian robots are already firing their various distractions about who the perpetrator was, and you know, and then within a day or two, they're up with the false flag that it never happened, the conspiracy. We need to find ways to spend less time living in the cyber world and spending more time living in the real world, and we have to find a way to make sure that our legislators are not reacting to 250,000 Twitter messages that are generated by a Russian computational network and are reacting instead to the needs of their constituents. One of the ways we're moving away from democracy is that the stuff that happens, and the Nunes memo, you know, a couple weeks ago is a good example of this, is increasingly driven by, you know, algorithms written by Russian programmers, and it's not driven by what Americans actually need. Florida is a painful example of that.
Timothy Snyder, professor of history at Yale University, author of On Tyranny, 20 Lessons from the 20th Century, his upcoming book, The Road to Unfreedom, Russia, Europe, America. Tim Weiner, Pulitzer Prize winner, formerly with the New York Times, author of Enemies, A History of the FBI, and Legacy of Ashes, The History of the CIA. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Great pleasure. Thank you.